affecting you. Park Radio's look at the issues and events locals are talking about.
Hi, and welcome to Affecting You. I'm Kamara Miller. This week on the show, Darren Enns comes in to talk about Phase 1 of the Land Use Bylaw Review. Artist Anthony Schrog talks about his conversational and somewhat controversial project in town. And we get a quick update about last week's 350 Day of Climate Change event. We'll get another Mountain View with Andy Winfield. And I'll talk about the chance I had to go count elk with the Resource Conservation Team. But first, I'm here with Chad Townsend, Environmental Coordinator for the Town of Banff. And Chad comes in once a week to give us some green tips. Sorry, Chad comes in once a month to give us some green tips. And today we're talking about water. Hi, Chad.
Hi.
So why don't you tell me about water conservation? Why should we be interested in it?
Well, there's lots of reasons. Environmental reasons, financial reasons why consuming less water makes sense. And the town is now offering a number of rebate programs because it's in everybody's interest to use less of our potable water. We pump it up, we consume it, then we spend a whole lot of resources and money to treat it before we put it back into the river. So all of those stages involve consumption of electricity, creation of greenhouse gases, consumption of natural gas, and cleaning process chemicals as well. So it makes a lot of sense to flush less and shower shorter and use some of the technology that's out there so that we can maintain our similar lifestyle but use less water.
You had mentioned, the new technology, taking advantage of the new technology, and that's what the town is kind of incorporating in these rebates. Do you want to tell me about that?
Sure. There's a number of rebates that now council has decided to fund. Toilet replacement rebate we've had for a couple of years now, and we have some data based on that. But basically, the town will give you back money if you decide to replace your 13-liter flush toilet with either a low flush toilet, which is usually about 6 liters, or even better, a dual flush toilet, which is usually 3 and 6 liters. So depending on what you need to get rid of, you use less water with those. And so we give out rebates of $100 and $75 for those, which usually covers about a third to a half of that fixture cost. So that makes a lot of sense. We're also giving out water saver kits for free to Banff residents. That includes a low flow shower head, some valves and some tape to prevent leaks, which is also a big source of wasted water, and also a bag that you put in your toilet to use even less water. So those are available to both businesses and residents in the town of Banff if you decide to get what's called an energy audit, which also looks at water consumption within your house. The town will give you back money associated with that, $250. So that, and finally the dishwasher rebate to get a high efficiency, what's called Energy Star dishwasher, which uses very little water. The town will offer you $100 back if you buy one of those. So all incentives to help Banff residents do what we would like them to do, but also save money on their water bills. And at the same time as we're offering these, we're also raising variable water rates about 20% a year. So it makes environmental sense and financial sense to use less water.
And like you had mentioned, the great part about all of this is that getting these new technologies and lowering your water consumption just a little bit really doesn't change your lifestyle that much at all.
Well, it shouldn't, and that's part of a low-flow shower head or a low-flush toilet, still basically doing the same job but using a whole lot less water. And there's also a number of things you can do without changing your technology, including turning off the tap while you're brushing your teeth, taking a shorter shower, not flushing every time, and making sure your dishwasher or clothes washer is absolutely full before you use it, chilling a water bottle instead of running the tap, a number of things that are out there we could easily do without affecting your lifestyle very much.
And you had kind of touched on this, but using less water is just a little bit of the whole water conservation project, because yes, we would be using less water, but the energy, can you tell me how the energy filters into this problem as well?
Well, as a town within a national park, we're looking to reduce a lot of natural resource consumption. And the processes involved in getting our water up and out of the ground to our various residences, especially those on the other side of the river and up in Middle Springs and Banff Center, all require pumping, further pumping to get it up to them. Those are all sources of consumption of electricity. And then our wastewater treatment plant, which takes the water at the end of its use from showering or toilets, is our biggest consumer of both electricity and natural gas. And in Alberta, most of our electricity is coming from fossil fuels, so all of those are sources of greenhouse gases which we could avoid by using less water. We're lucky to be at the top of the watershed and have plentiful supplies, but there's still a number of financial and environmental costs associated with consuming a whole lot of water, which we do by the nature of our community. So that's why the rebates are out there for both businesses and residents. Our hotels are some of our biggest consumers of water in town, and they too could think about changing some of their fixtures if they haven't already.
Well, I want to get back to the commercial use in a second, but like you had mentioned, it does affect, just because we're at the top of the watershed doesn't mean that we have unlimited water. Our water systems go down well into Saskatchewan, who doesn't have these glaciers melting off into it. So really what we're doing is also affecting people in two provinces, and it's interesting. We should keep in
Two or three provinces. Some of the water may end up in Manitoba. So, yeah, we are the water towers. I've heard that analogy before, and that comes with a responsibility. A lot of people are going to use this water after us. We can easily imagine Canmore and Calgary just down river, but it's going to be used by a whole lot more people.
Yeah, so you got to think about our friends in the other two provinces.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah.
And so you had touched on it, commercial water usage. Are there rebates out for them as well?
Yeah, it's now, as of a few months ago, available to hotels and other businesses who would like to either have an energy audit done or replace some of their toilet fixtures. The rebates are the same, $100 for dual flush toilets and $75 for low flush toilets. I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's also what we've heard that visitors are expecting when they come to a national park town is that we will be environmentally friendly in a number of respects. And so hopefully it's both a money saver for hotels, but also matching their customer expectations, which would be very nice too.
Interesting. I didn't think about that.
Well, I think it's an opportunity, really, and it's something that we can easily match within our facilities, visitor experiences from arrival to departure and a number of things that they're going to encounter. So we want to make sure that they perhaps take back some ideas to their own communities from what they've seen in Banff, but also they get what they were expecting within a national park town.
Definitely.
That respects its resources.
How long has this rebate been going on for?
Well, on a residential side, we've had it now for almost 3 years, which is a nice opportunity to look at some consumption data. We, of course, bill for water, so we can look back on how much people have consumed. And amongst the very earliest people who bought into the toilet rebate program and changed their fixtures, we can look back and notice that within 2008, the last full year we can look at compared to 2007 for those roughly 20 households, their water consumption went down just by changing their toilet an average of about 20%. Some households have even achieved over 50% water use reduction. So it's one part of your larger water consumption within there, and whether they can take shorter showers, replace some of their fixtures, you know, all contributes towards the bill you get, but also the environmental footprint you create.
Definitely. And then you had mentioned, I just want to briefly touch on it again as another reason for people to get interested in conserving water. The water price bills will be going up.
Yeah, in 2007, council passed a series of water rate increases, basically because pipes and cleaning water and water treatment, all of those things, the costs are going up. So if we want to cover our costs with the utility, for the next 5 years, it'll be going up 20%, the variable water rate. That's it. That's based on how much you consume. And I imagine it will continue to go up after that because these things like pumps, like electricity, aren't becoming any cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, saving water makes sense from a number of different perspectives.
And even if you can't afford anything to take advantage of the rebate, like you had mentioned, brushing your teeth and turning off the water as you're brushing, or filling the dishwasher or washer and dryer before you use them. Do you have any other tips?
Well, those are some very basic ones, but I'm sure most people can just look critically about how often they turn on the tap and is everything essential as opposed to desirable. And I don't think their lifestyle would be greatly affected, and yet their water bill could go down significantly.
What about rain barrels? I've heard about those as another form. Can you tell me about how those work?
Well, the rain barrels are great in a couple of ways, and one is that for those people who want to water their plants and water their lawn in the summertime, this is soft water coming from the sky as opposed to chlorinated treated water for drinking. So that's a source if people can have rain barrels. The second reason for them is it's a little less stormwater going into our gutters and into our river system. So with those two benefits in mind, the town is offering a $25 post-purchase rebate. If you buy a rain barrel for your house, just save the receipt and bring it in, and we'll give you money back, because it's something that we would like to see households use in this national park town.
How much is a rain barrel about?
Well, they range. There's a bit of a range, but they're $50 to a couple hundred dollars.
Great, great. So how can people take advantage of these rebates? Do they go check it out online or?
With any of these rebates, from toilets to shower heads, basically you just come into town hall with your receipt for your purchase and we process a check. If your utility counts in good standing, that's part of the benefit of being a resident of Banff.
Well, thank you for coming in and chatting with us, and we'll see you again next month.
Thanks, Kamara.
We have to take a quick break, but we have plenty of great pieces coming up, including My Morning Counting Elk.
Affecting You, we'll be right back. And now back to Affecting You.
Welcome back to Affecting You. I'm Kamara Miller. Elk are an important part of the mountain landscape and identity. With populations at stable, sustainable levels, tourists are often able to catch a glimpse of these animals. On Tuesday, I was invited to a ride-along to compile the elk census for the fall. The count took place Tuesday morning, afternoon, and then again on Wednesday morning. The day started early, meeting at the warden office at 8 a.m., where I split off with Blair Fighton for the day. Okay, so where are we heading out today?
So our route today is the town site of Banff to do the recreation grounds, Tunnel Mountain, and Vermilion Lakes Road. So that's our route, and there's four other groups out there too. And you know, each group has their specific route that we follow, and we stick to the same routes year after year.
And what exactly are we doing very early today this morning?
So we're out counting elk. It's our annual classified elk count, and it's something that we do twice a year, spring and fall. And yeah, this is just our fall classified count, and we're out counting the elk in Bow Valley and getting a ratio of males, females, and calves.
How accurate is the count?
So we do our best to find most of the elk, but obviously, you know, we probably don't get all of them, because some could be in a bush or you just miss them. But it gives us a trend over the years, and it gives us a minimum number.
And what do we do with the numbers after we get them in the next 2 days?
All the data is inputted in the databases, and we build tables, and just kind of shows us the general trend over the years at where our population is sitting in the Bow Valley.
And do we just count one elk, two elk? How do we track them?
Yeah, when we see some, we just stop the vehicle here and get out with our binoculars or spotting scopes and, yeah, just count them one by one.
And how many are you expecting to see today?
Well, I'm thinking we're probably going to see in about around 230. I mean, that was our count last year, so I suspect it'll be roughly the same.
Are there any stories that come to mind when you think about going out every year and counting elk that stick out in your head? Has anyone been chased around, or, you know, car get dinged up? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, generally, when we're doing the counts, it's no real stories come to mind. But obviously, during the rut or during calving season, when we've had to move calves out of town or chase bulls out of town, there's, you know, there's lots of stories that pop up from those events where people have been chased by a mother cow elk or a bull that's been trying to look after his harem.
Mm-hmm. And what's your favorite elk story? The first one that, you know, your bar story about elk?
Well, I can remember when I just started out with warden service here and had the call that there was a calf elk in somebody's backyard. So we went to that location and found a calf, and the mother was hanging around and she was quite aggressive towards us. But we ended up picking that calf up and putting it on the tailgate of the truck and going down the street a couple of blocks to get it out to the edge of town, and then put the calf, you know, in a bush on the edge of town. But the mother cow, she was just right on our heels the whole way there. So it was quite an eye-opener for somebody that hasn't done this before.
Definitely. You have to know what to do around them, right? Because they can get pretty aggressive.
Yeah, no, you definitely have to be wary, because they do strike with their hooves or antlers, depending what sex they are. But no, you have to be on your edge, and you have to have help, and you have to have trust in the people that are helping you, that you're looking after each other out there.
Our route took us first up Tunnel Mountain without any elk glimpses. Since snow coated the ground Monday night, we could see that there weren't even any tracks around. On our way into the town site, our first spotting was a couple of deer.
Okay, so what we have here is a couple of deer. So we record those two. Let's see, so we're down by the Cavan Basin, and we have a adult male or female and a young of year fawn with her. So I'll make note that they're a whitetail. One adult female.
Finally, after over an hour of searching, we spotted our first elk to count.
So here we got one bull elk on the edge of town. And we'll just record where we see him and his location. And it's one adult male we have here.
Great. And they're not bothered by us in the car?
I know, you can see he's, you might call him a habituated elk. He's pretty used to people, and obviously not scared of us here at all. You know, we're only 25 meters from him here, so he feels pretty safe.
The rest of the trip proved just as unlucky. On the Vermilion Lakes Road, we didn't see a thing. Ironically, earlier I asked Blair if some groups ever go out on these trips and spot zero elk, and he said it was very rare to spend a route without any sightings. But, of course, our trip proved that it wasn't as rare as he believed. Assuming most elk were at the golf course, Blair was kind enough to take me to see at least some elk, even if they didn't need counting. At the golf course, we drove by Steve Michel and Ron LeBlanc, who had the same idea.
Down here just to make sure there was still an elk in the park.
That's right. We only seen one, so I thought, well, we better show Camara some elk.
There's a bunch down there, but we could see that Tom was still driving around and back and forth and everything, still doing his count, so we thought, oh, we better get out of here before
yeah.
we stir him up. But you'll see there's a few just right by the clubhouse, and then he's okay. A little further down.
Alrighty. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw two little whitetails, and that was it.
That was it, eh? Ooh. Just got the one bull there that's going into Central Park now, eh?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Might want to
kick him in. Though.
Might want to boost him.
We'll go chase him. We'll find out where all the rest are.
Okay.
And after sending them to take care of the bull elk that we spotted at the White Museum, we continued through the golf course to the elk, the dozens and dozens of elk. Yeah, there's another one with a collar.
Yeah, I just put that collar on her last Thursday.
Oh, yeah?
494. Haven't seen her since then. She's doing good.
And with that, it was time to head back to the warden office. Driving past the Indian grounds, we spotted a harem. Checking our list, we could see that Steve and Ron were supposed to be covering the area, and after radioing them, we found out they were still attending to the bull elk in the town site. So finally, I got to take part in counting some elk.
Okay, so you got to be the recorder, and I'm just going to call them out. So what happens is, I'll just go adult, male, female, whatever. You just make check marks in each of these categories, okay?
Okay.
The hard thing is sometimes when they're laying down, it's to tell the difference between a calf and a cow. So I just kind of... Okay. cow, and if they got their head down, they're kind of hard to tell sometimes, so I just sit there and wait and wait for them to lift their head, so you can tell the difference between whether it's a calf or a cow. So that's just kind of what I'm waiting for here now, is for one to lift its head that I'm looking at. And I generally just kind of start at one side of the pack and work through them, so I'm going left to right here. Okay, cow, calf, which is young of year, calf, cow, cow.
And now I'll check in with Blair about the census results.
Cow.
So Blair, how did the rest of the tracking go?
The survey turned out good. We feel that we got to count most of the elk that are in the Bow Valley here, and we're happy with our numbers right now.
And what numbers are we looking at?
So we got a total of 249 elk in and around the town side of Banff and the Bow Valley here, from the East Gates to Lake Louise was the area surveyed. And of that 249 elk, we can break that down into 156 mature cows, 43 mature bulls, 13 spike bulls, and 37 calves. So that gives us a cow-calf ratio of 24%, which is pretty much normal for here the last few years.
Yeah, everything looks normal, not too high, not too low?
No, actually, from last year, this exact same time, we had 248 elk, so we got one more elk. We're pretty much staying fairly stable.
Great, and that's what we want.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, we wanted to reduce our numbers a little bit, but just seems like they're kind of holding their own for now.
And what did you get? Like, you and I couldn't find very many. Did you notice that with the other groups, that they weren't finding any until they went to the golf course?
That's right. You know, we ended up finding a couple of groups around town in other places, but for the majority, I think, of that 249, there ended up being 173 on the golf course. So, yeah, the majority was down there on the golf course.
And the bull elk that we saw at the White Museum, he got chased away, no problem?
Yeah, no, he got moved out of town and actually got moved down to the golf course.
Oh, he did too. Great. Well, is there anything else, anything that surprised you while you were crunching the numbers?
No, nothing really out of the unusual here. Everything appeared to be quite normal.
Well, thank you for the opportunity letting me tag along during this.
Yeah, no, it was great having you there, Kamara.
Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
What do you think about elk in the town site? Let us know in the feedback line at 403-762-1536. We have to take a quick break, but there are many more great stories coming up.
Affecting You, we'll be right back. And now back to Affecting You.
Welcome back to Affecting You. I'm Kamara Miller. I'm here with artist Anthony Schrog, and we're talking about the project he came to Banff to complete. He was interested in looking at the relationship between the town and the Banff Center. Why don't you first start by telling me about the article that you wrote for the Craig and Canyon?
Sure. Well, I'm not one of those artists that paints or draws. I can't really do that, as I said in my article. My work is more about kind of encouraging conversations and discussions for different communities, different places. So I recognize that people read the paper a lot. So I thought that was a really good way of kind of reaching the real people, man. So I wrote it to kind of get people to feedback and get their ideas of what they thought about the center, what they thought about Banff, and all those sorts of things.
And what was the feedback you got?
Well, it's been very little. And I think a lot of that is because a lot of people are afraid to actually have their opinions written down. So a lot of people haven't actually written me any emails. A lot of people have stopped me and talked about it, which is great. And they'll sort of usher me into a corner and tell me in secret what they actually think. But very few people have actually written their opinions down, which is maybe speaks about something else about Banff. But it's been interesting. Some of the two that I've got, one's been incredibly positive. One's been very constructively critical.
And what your project isn't done, I guess, but what have you concluded so far as to the relationship between the town of Banff and the Banff Center up on the hill?
Well, no conclusions yet. I mean, I think the main one conclusion that I found interesting is that people seem a little bit scared of conversation. And the whole project that I'm doing is just about encouraging conversation and saying there's nothing wrong with actually talking about your opinions, and there's nothing wrong with actually getting the information flowing, because if we don't, then that's a problem. You know, then we've got a situation where a community is not talking to each other about their ideas. So I think that's the main kind of interesting thing that I've discovered. But I really would like to come back and talk more about it. The Banff Center has been incredibly supportive about my research, and that's been really wonderful as an artist to know that. And so is the people of Banff. So I've been really happy to be here. I'm certainly not coming here to upset anyone. I'm just kind of interested in having a conversation. I keep wanting to go, it's just talking. We're not doing anything. We're just talking.
What you're talking about, the kind of fear of the conversation, is the fact that you're maybe looking into the fact that, yes, that the Banff Center doesn't really trickle down into the town. You work primarily out of Glasgow?
Yes, I do.
So what's the art community-city relationship there?
It's interesting in the sense that a lot of the funding for artists and a lot of the art projects and some of the galleries that are run come directly from the city council. So the council itself is really involved in helping artists and looking at different situations to talk about the town itself. So, for example, the Gallery of Modern Art, which is a really big project and a big gallery space, funds outreach and they fund education projects and they fund like youth work and they fund music and they fund big art galleries that are, you know, just for the artists to go into. They understand that it's a spectrum between art with a capital A that only the artists with the beret will understand and the kind of fun community arts that maybe a kid will understand and everything in between. And I wouldn't say it's a perfect system, but it's a system where people are still interested in talking and debating about what the possibilities are. And I think that's important because the discussions are really fascinating.
And you've been mentioning that maybe people won't, for the record, give you their opinion, but that locals are letting you know on the streets that they don't feel that there is much of a mesh between the art.
Not everyone. I mean, a lot of people are really happy with it. I mean, I have to say that that's you know, not everyone's kind of got pitchforks and about to go up and burn down the center. That's totally not the case as well. But there have some people have felt that, you know, in a place, perhaps other towns, there's an effort to create community centers and to create art in schools and those sorts of things and public events. Whereas I think some of the people have been saying that there's just an expectation that that will happen in Banff because the Banff Center is here. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's a reality. Nor is it the Banff Center's mandate to do that. It's because it's not part of the town. It's just an assumption that, well, it's there, then it should be doing these things. And that's an interesting thing because I think the Banff Center does do a lot of projects and outreach and workshops, but it isn't their mandate in that way to do that. And so maybe it'd be interesting to have the discussions to who could make that happen or how it could happen or what people want. And, you know, maybe no one wants art in town and that's fine too, you know? I mean, it's part of that conversation.
Going back to Glasgow, what could we learn? What are a couple tips you could, you know, bring across the ocean, let us know?
Drink less beer. Don't stab people. That's generally Glasgow. Tips, though, I don't know. I think the interesting thing is to have those conversations, to not be afraid of talking about stuff, because it's just words and it's finding out what people think. And it's, I think if we have those conversations about, not just about the center, but about what appropriate land use is, what a community wants versus what the Parks Canada is legally responsible for, I think having those conversations in humorous and fun ways is really interesting. I think there obviously people do have those public venues to go and sort of express themselves how they feel at Parks Canada, and even the town have open surgeries where the people can discuss those. But, you know, people have got jobs, they've got, you know, they don't really want to sit in a meeting for 8 hours. There's a lot of things. So if you could have more free and fun conversations where there's an easier flow of information, I think that could be really interesting. I don't know how that could happen. That's what the research is, finding that out.
And you were doing research about this project. What was the initial end point that you were going to be doing at the end of your month's stay?
Oh, well, that's the nature of being an artist, you know. You never know. You know, I had an idea that I would like to explore this because it's a really unique situation. I've done other projects that have ended up in kidnapping curators and city councillors. I've done other projects where I put a mayor in a hole for two days. He agreed to it. And so I didn't really have any specific idea, but that's kind of exciting as an artist. What I think I've discovered is that it's going to take me a lot longer to come up with something that hopefully is exciting to a lot of people. So I'd like to come back and I'd like to do something. Maybe I'll kidnap the whole town. Who knows?
You should tell us about the zipline idea as well.
Right, yes. Well, that's the second strand of the project that I kind of didn't put a name to it because I kind of didn't want it to be specifically about me. I've met with folks in Parks Canada and the town and the Banff Centre and a lot of people on the street, and just kind of talked about the conversation that keeps coming up is what is appropriate land use. And that's a really interesting discussion because everyone has opinions. And again, everyone has opinions, but very few people are actually talking to each other about those opinions. And so the zipline idea started as a way to kind of get the people from the Banff Centre out of the Banff Centre really quick and into the town, almost like an almost escape route for the artists. I think it was because they were really wanted to get down to have a drink when the pub up there closed, and that was the fastest way down. But it slowly developed into this project of talking about what appropriate land use is, and also because the zipline is such a contentious issue. So it came about as a way to kind of ask people what they thought appropriate land use was. And the responses for that have been much more than the column I wrote. And they've ranged from someone threatening legal action if I actually built it, to someone going, this is the best idea I've ever heard, I will give you all my money to do it, to sort of local companies going, can we partner in on this? So I feel kind of mean because it wasn't actually going to happen. It was just a proposal, again, a proposal for discussion. But obviously I've hit a sore spot.
Was the anxiety over it because it's in Banff National Park and we have a lot of strict rules, or is it something else?
I don't know. I think, again, a lot of it goes back to that that issue of not talking to each other. I've spoken to just folks that I've kind of met and they've gone, wow, I've heard about that zipline project, and say, oh, I've had a massive argument with my wife, or someone's gone, yeah, this. I sat her up with my friends all night drinking, thinking what a fantastic project this is. But again, very few people have committed to that debate in a public sphere. So I don't know what'll come out of that. That's just kind of, I wanted to find out what people thought. And I don't know if it's because it's in the center or just because it's a contentious issue, so people have opinions about it. It's an interesting thing because, you know, at the end of the day, Parks Canada has a legal responsibility for everything that happens here, and they've got mandates to follow along as well, and as does the town and as do the people. So it's a really interesting intersection. And I mean, I'm Canadian, but I've lived in Scotland for 8 years now, and living in a place where, you know, it's, things have developed naturally over hundreds and hundreds of years because it's an old community. And so people kind of know things because they've been there. But looking at Banff, it relatively is a very new town. I mean, sociologically speaking, it's still kind of finding its feet. And so is the park, and so is the center, and so is everyone. So that's why it's interesting, and that's why it's important to talk about these issues now. Yeah.
Well, there's so much that you've been doing, catapults, interventions. Is there a website people can check out?
There is. It's antonyshirac.com. That's very difficult to spell. So it's just antonyshirag.com.
And are you still hoping for some feedback? You're still planning on doing the project.
Please, yes. I want as much feedback as possible. Everything that I get back from people is confidential. So if you do want to write in and say whatever you want, it's fine. You can do that. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to show it to anyone else. So my website will have my email address. Again, that's antonyshirac.com.
Perfect. Well, is there anything else you want to leave us with before you head on a plane back to Scotland?
Just thanks for having me here, and thanks for having me in Banff. It's been an amazing experience. I really hope to come back. Please let me know if you want me back.
Perfect. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any comments for Antony or any comments about the relationship between the town and the Banff Centre? Let us know on the feedback line at 403-762-1536. Or you can email us at feedback@parkradio.ca. Last weekend, we had the 350 Day of Climate Change campaign taking place all over the world. For an update on how the event went, I'm talking with Christine LaRocque, Banff Life Programmer for the town of Banff. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you.
Tell me about how the event went.
I feel that Dave and I both, because Dave Zellhurst is the other event organizer, we feel that the event went really, really well. We had good numbers in the morning for the big giant 350, and then we walked down Banff Avenue with a town's Roam bus, a couple of Parks Canada's vehicles, hybrid vehicles, some great artwork from the elementary school, and some great community spirit. And then again in the evening, we had around 86 people show up for our delicious home-cooked dinner and some amazing talks by Bob Sanford, Sarah Renner, and a gentleman from Pembina. His name was Marlo Reynolds.
Okay, and how many people turned up for the big 350?
We didn't actually do a head count. It was roughly 75, 76 people is what we, when we do the little count from the photo.
That's how many you could check
showed
out.
Showed up, yes.
And then there was something, Dave had mentioned something last week about being picked to go on Times Square. Can you tell me about that?
There was over 181 countries around the world with over 5,200 events, all taking place on the same day. The Banff event was chosen as one of the top five events taking place in Canada, and those photos, what photos we submitted, were put up in Times Square.
Great. What an honor.
Yeah, it was really quite exciting.
And did you get to hear a lot about what was happening all over the world? I mean, you said the numbers have gone up since last week when Dave and I spoke.
Yes.
But how did the event end up turning out? What was the reaction from it?
From globally, the reaction is huge. If you go on their website, which is www.350.org, you can witness a slideshow, which basically takes you all over the world to all 181 countries and shows you photos from all 5,200 events. And they are still getting in photos from people who are still submitting. So it's absolutely phenomenal to have been part of such a global event. Just to know that we were taking part with people from all over the world to share and stand in a common cause.
Definitely. And this was to raise awareness for the meeting in Copenhagen in December. Do you see an event like this happening again next year?
To be honest with you, I'm not too sure.
Okay.
I hope so.
Yeah, but there isn't really a big meeting exactly to...
There's no meeting planned for... that time next year, so we're not too if they do want us to do something next year, we'll jump on the bandwagon again.
Great.
And do it again, because it's important for the Banff community.
And do you personally feel like a difference has been made?
I really want to believe that this message will get out, and that hopefully that the meetings in Copenhagen in December will promote change, because as Dave was telling you last week, we need to act now, and that's why we had the letter writing at the event, and that's why this was going on, was we need to make changes now. We can no longer keep saying, oh, our grandchildren or our children will have to make some sacrifices. We need to make sacrifices in our lives now.
Exactly.
For the future.
And are there any websites, if people miss the event, that they can go on to sign some petitions or to send some emails to the government officials?
There's Step It Up Alberta. Mm-hmm. They have online petitions and letter writing campaigns as well. You can get some information off of the 350.org website. You can go on to the Interpretive Guides Association website and get more information, as well as the Banff Life website. We'll have some information.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time and giving us an update, Christine.
Great. Thank you very much.
Now I'm here with Darren Entz, Senior Planner for the Town of Banff, and we're talking about the Phase 1 proposal. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So why don't you tell me about what's being talked about in the proposal and use bylaw review?
Well, it's nothing new for those of who people who've been in the community since the April launch of Phase 1. What we're doing is we're now taking the proposals that we discussed with the public through our consultation process to council for consideration. And so as part of that, council has given us first reading and allowed us to schedule a public hearing, which is going to occur on November 9th at 7 p.m. at council chambers. So this is the public's chance to again give their feedback, this time directly to council as opposed to the review team. So it's another opportunity, a formal opportunity to make their presentations to council.
And then what's the next phase after the November 9th hearing?
Well, in terms of what has to happen with Phase 1, it'll go to council for a second reading for a vote after that, and then eventually it has to get approved by Parks as well. So there's a few more steps that has to occur after the public hearing. Now, in addition to Phase 1, of course, we're looking forward to launching Phase 2, which is dealing with commercial development and commercial growth regulations in the town of Banff. So we're very excited about that, and right now we're looking to have that launch by the end of November.
Great. And going back to the Phase 1 launch, specifically, what were kind of the hot topic areas that people were talking about?
Well, there was no shortfall of hot topics, that's to be certain. What we try to do is take forward a range of options to the community and say, you know, we can address our population growth and our changing population a number of ways. One is through the rezoning of greenfield sites within the town. So that's converting what basically is parkland right now to residential land. And the other option was to intensify our existing residential land base, so redeveloping existing residential properties into more units.
Okay. And we were talking earlier in the summer about the consultation period going back and forth. How did that end up turning out? What was the response you were getting from the town?
Well, the first thing I pointed out is that we had an excellent turnout to these events, and I really want to thank those people in the community that stopped by to the tent. You know, we had an open house initially at Town Hall where we drew 30 people, and the first tent event we had drew 40 or 50 people. So we had great numbers turning out throughout that process, and we're very appreciative of the interest the community has taken. In terms of what we heard back from them, the public was very clear that they're extremely concerned about losing an existing green space within the town. And so from that perspective, there's a lot more support for the redevelopment options than there was for the greenfield or the rezoning options.
Interesting. And on November 9th, when people come out to the hearing, what kind of format are we looking at? How will people get their opinions heard?
Well, it's going to be a bit more formal than our tent events. We'll still give you juice and cookies, though. What we'll have is basically council will administer the meeting, and we'll have an open mic sort of presentation that you can come in and be a delegation to. We'll also have a lot of our background material that we've presented before at the open house is available for people to speak to. So display boards and things of that sort. So if you're not prepared, you can always come and use our material and say, well, I like this and I don't like that. And that might help people get their opinions across to council.
Definitely. And to prepare themselves, if people want to read into it, is there any place that they can check it out?
Absolutely. It's on our website at www.banff.ca/rlanduse. And you'll find a link there to our council package. It's quite lengthy. We've tried to make it as succinct as possible. So they can look at it there. And hopefully what they'll see there is the same information that we've taken to the public through our consultation process. So again, all these issues are now just moving forward to council through the regulatory process.
And then once that's all dealt with, phase two. Can you tell me a little bit about what that's going
to
cover?
Yeah. In each phase of the land use bylaw review, we tried to tackle one big issue. So in phase one, it was residential growth and residential density. In phase two, we're going to be looking at commercial development and commercial growth. So the town of Banff is very unique in that we control not only the total amount of commercial floor space, but also the rate of increase. And so we've got very tight commercial controls, and we're looking for feedback from not only the business community, but also residents on how we might change those and how we can be flexible moving forward to adapt to a changing commercial landscape.
Perfect. Well, is there anything you want to let people know before the Monday hearing?
No, if they do want to come out, it might be a good idea to get in touch with the town staff first. You can give me a call at 762-1120 and just let us know you're coming out so that we can book some time ahead for you.
And it's at the council chamber at what time?
At 7 o'clock on the 9th.
Perfect. Well, thanks for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
Now let's hear another Mountain View with Andy Winfield.
Seems you can't keep a good Colombian ground squirrel down. This summer, one of the bunch that call the Lake Minnewanka area home became a YouTube star when he popped up uninvited in a self-portrait taken by a couple of Australian visitors on the lakeshore. The photo went viral when it was posted on the website, and thousands must have seen it before public attention moved on to other things. Now the critter's back, thanks to the combined efforts of Banff Lake Louise Tourism, Travel Alberta, and an Australian-based outfit called Value Tours, who have chosen to feature the scene-stealing rodent in a promotional campaign. They've even given him a name, Crasher, a reference to his habit of crashing the photo ops of unsuspecting tourists, I suppose. Crasher is getting a lot of mileage out of what was, let's face it, a split-second appearance in front of a digital camera, which was set up to record a couple of visitors with mountains in the lake as a backdrop. By now, the tiny celebrity is probably holed up in a snug burrow with his buddies, boring them with the 100th telling of the story of that one shining moment when his curiosity brought him face to face with a camera lens and he became something more than a mere furry little freeloader. There are 53 species of mammals in Banff National Park. Some, like the grizzly bear, are on the verge of extinction. Others, like the elk, are common enough to provide all but the most inattentive visitors an opportunity to view nature firsthand. There are wolverines, porcupines, weasels, wolves, and let's not forget the coyotes. With this incredible variety of fauna in the park, why is it that a lowly ground squirrel gets the break and goes on to internet stardom? And now it appears it's not going to stop there. The squirrel has become a big player in the tourist promotion game. He's mastered the digital camera. Perhaps he can use the winter months to master the cell phone. Then, when he pops his head above ground next spring, he can call his agent. By the looks of things, he's going to need one. And that's one Mountain View without a ground squirrel. I'm Andy Winfield.
That's one Mountain View. Do you have one you want to share with us or have a comment on anything you heard on the show this week? Give us a call on the feedback line at 403-762-1536 or you can email us at feedback@parkradio.ca. That's it for this week. Thanks to my guests Chad Townsend, Blair Fighton, Anthony Schrag, Christine LaRocque, Darren Enns, and Andy Winfield. Affecting You can be heard each week at this time on Park Radio, and we podcast the show. Head to friendsofbanff.com and click on the podcast link. Thanks for listening, and remember to tune in next week for more of What's Affecting You.
Affecting You, only on Park Radio, 101.1 FM.